Hello and welcome to another edition of The More Show, which is sponsored by the UFO Matrix magazine. On today's show, I'm about to be joined with my guest, the legendary Eric von Daniken. Now, Eric first presented more than 40 years ago his theory of extraterrestrial contact with the ancient world. Eric von Daniken is the best-selling non-fiction author of all times. His 29 books have sold more than 63 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 32 languages, including his 1968 book, Chariots of the Gods. Besides creating a whirlwind of conspiracy, his work has had a far-reaching influence on the entertainment and science industries. Eric von Daniken, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm living in Switzerland. I'm talking from Switzerland.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. It really is an honour. Now, Eric, just for our younger audience, just explain a bit about your work and yourself.
Well, in the meantime, I'm 75 years old. I'm married. I have two children. And, of course, I have published so far 31 books. It all started with Chariots of the Gods, which was a world bestseller. In Chariots of the Gods, that was in 1968, I have come up with the theory that long, long time ago, in the past of mankind, we were visited by beings from outer space. Now, our ancestors at that time were Stone Age people. They did not realize what was going on. They had no idea about technology. So they misunderstood the extraterrestrials and believed that these beings are some kind of gods. So the gods entered into religions, into mythology and legends. That's the basic point.
Now, you've sold, in excess of 63 million books. I mean, what's it like to have your readings out there and exposed to all these people? Was it difficult to begin with?
It was very, very difficult to begin with because I was criticized all over the world. More or less, the whole scientific community crashed me down. But the time has changed. You know, in the beginning, some 40 years or more ago, it was really impossible to think about space travel from star to star, because these are light years of distances. In the meantime, many astronomers and astrophysicists see a possibility how we could do this. In the meantime, 40 years ago, nobody was talking about genetics or genetic code or changing genetic code. I had all this already in my first book, in Chariots of the Gods. In the meantime, we do it. Every genetic can do it, can change the genetic code if he wishes, and if it's moral and ethic, and so on. So in the beginning, I was absolutely crashed down, but the situation has changed. In the meantime, I would say more or less the scientific community think it is quite possible what this Eric von Daniken said. We will not exclude it anymore, but it's my problem to bring some proofs. For the moment, all I have is indications, thousand wonderful indications, but I have not one complete proof. I have never found an extraterrestrial object which I could present to the scientific community.
So would you say then, Eric, that our history is wrong? And if that is the case, why haven't mainstream scholars come to the same conclusions?
It's a question of our politics and especially of our religion. You see, we have many wonderful religions on our planet, and it all starts, these religions, with some gods. For example, we have the Old Testament, the Bible. Now there you can read, before the Lord of the Bible descends on the Holy Mountain, he gives order to Moses, to the prophet, to construct a gate around the mountain so that the people, the Israelites, would not be destroyed. So Moses constructs a gate. And then the Lord descends from heaven to earth with smoke and fire and loud noise and trembling and so on. Now, Eric von Daniken comes and says, this was not God. This was something different. I suggest it was an extraterrestrial landing. Now, of course, all the whole theologians in the world are against it. They have to be against it. They say, this is crazy what this von Daniken says. The Lord descended from the sky, not an extraterrestrial. And so you promptly have the controversy. Of course, you have to be attacked. When someone came up with a theory like mine, he should never expect that the scientific community embraces him and kisses him and says, oh, that's wonderful, wonderful idea. First, we live in a democratic society, and the critic is okay. I have always accepted the critics.
So in your opinion then, the ancient gods were extraterrestrial, they were the gods of antiquity?
Definitely, yes.
So, okay, as ancestors think that these ancient visitors were, you know, divine, they were magical in nature, it was Arthur C. Clarke that did say that any significant technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes or no, so it's complicated. You see, my suggestion is not that extraterrestrials, for example, created or constructed the Great Pyramid. It was always the humans who did these gigantic things. Question is always why? For what reasons, for example, have mankind in the past constructed gigantic pyramids, big temples, and so on? Now, the usual answer from the scientific community is, we did it because of religion. What religion? Normally, it's a natural religion. For example, our Stone Age people had no idea about the lightning, about the thundering. They could not understand the rising and up and down of the sun or the moon. So natural religions have occurred, and this is normal. But you have to make a big difference. In the ancient holy texts, so many of them, the so-called gods from antiquity gave information. There was information from up to down. There were exact speeches. So nature does not speech. The lightning, the thundering does not speech, give not orders. So somebody was talking. Who was this somebody who was talking? And there I came and say, these were the extraterrestrials. And really, in this sense, I have too many indications which cannot be disproved anymore.
That's right. I mean, and also, Eric, what did the gods of the past promise our ancestors?
Promise our ancestors? Among the promises was, they will return. Now, every religion in the past, they had this expectation that somebody will return at some day. You see, when the Spanish conquerors arrived in today's Central America, the Mayas and the Aztecs, they were already expecting some gods to come. The same thing happened in South America. The Spanish conqueror Francisco Pizarro, when he arrived in today's Peru, the Incas believed that he was the long-expected god. The same thing in old Egypt. And still today, for example, I am educated as a Christian. The Christians are waiting for the re-coming of Jesus. Or the Jewish community, since thousands of years, they are waiting for the returning of their Messiah. Or the Muslim society, they are waiting for the returning of their Mahdi. So not only in antiquity, also in our present days, humanity is waiting for somebody to return. And in antiquity, these extraterrestrials, they promised our forefathers, we will return. And they will return someday.
Well, yes, it's like you just touched on there, Eric. I mean, every religious textbook, the Bible, the Quran, the Jewish texts, you know, they all talk about a return of their Messiah from the sky. I mean, but not every religion can be right, can it?
Of course not. None of those religions are right. They are all right in the one sense of expecting someone will come. But neither Messiah, neither Jesus, neither Mahdi, neither Osiris, none of them. Just and simply extraterrestrials will return. And this will be a shock for mankind.
Do you think our governments are preparing for their return?
I don't think. Normally, politicians are too stupid to think about these kind of things. They deal with today's problems with finances and with elections and so on. They don't think in terms of philosophy.
Now, how will they return, Eric? I mean, tell me about your ideas of a ship called a Generation Spaceship, I believe it's called.
We really don't know how it will happen, but it will definitely happen someday. You see, thousands of years ago, the tribe of the Maya in Central America, they were visited by extraterrestrials. At least this is what they say in their fairy tales. And also the Mayas have a fixed date of the return of the god. If you transfer the Maya calendar into our calendar, the Maya calendar started on August 14th, 3114 BC, and the Maya calendar will end on December 23rd, 2012. And according to Maya descriptions and Maya mythologies, on December 23rd, 2012, the gods will return from the sky. Now, how this will happen, in what form, what will we see? Is there a gigantic spaceship surrounding the Earth, or what will happen? We really don't know. There is no description about this.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so a lot of your work, Eric, ties into 2012, but the problem as I see 2012, it's not really our calendars. Our calendar's not correct, is it? I mean, we went from 1 BC to 1 AD. We never had year zero. I mean, scholars from Rome and Berkeley have determined that monks who were in charge of the Middle Ages recording of the calendar made mistakes. So, you know, was Jesus born on the 25th? I mean, all these questions. I mean, is this really 2012 that's coming up now, or are we, you know, 10 or 7 years off that?
I absolutely agree with you. You are perfect. Because nobody knows for sure if the transformation of the Maya dates, the Maya calendar, into our calendar is correct. So you never are sure if the date December 23rd, 2012 is correct. You are really not sure. We are not even sure about our own calendar. I mean, today while we are talking, we are counting the year 2010. That means 2010 years have passed since the birth of Jesus Christ. But we are not even sure of this. Maybe our calendar started 20 or 30 years later, and all the figures are wrong. So really, you cannot count on December 23rd, 2012, but you can definitely count of the return of the gods. Just nobody knows for sure when this will happen.
Of course, of course. Now, you know, most 2012 movies will show destruction, but really we're not talking about that, are we? What's in store for a sort of possible 2012 in your opinion?
Well, you see, there's this just gigantic movie going around from Roland Emmerich, 2012. And in this movie, the whole planet Earth is destroyed. Nothing about this is handed down in any old inscription, at really not to my knowledge. So the world will not be destroyed. What will be destroyed is our religion, maybe parts of our philosophical thinking, parts of our technology. For example, every reasonable astronomer is sure that there is no higher speed than the speed of light. Now, as soon as we get in contact with extraterrestrials, maybe they tell us, they teach us, of course there is a possibility of over speed of light. We just don't know it. Or since 20 or more years, we are looking for radio signals from extraterrestrials. Until today, to my knowledge, we have not received anything. Now, maybe we are looking on the wrong way, on the wrong wavelength, etc. Soon as we have contact with extraterrestrials, we will ask them, how do you manage this? And then we have contact in the intergalactical radio. So it will be a change completely in technology, in moral, in ethics, in religion, etc. This is maybe some sort of a judgment day, but the planet Earth definitely will not be destroyed.
So in your opinion then, Eric, you know, they don't have an agenda where we should be scared of them?
No, I don't think so. If someone possesses the technology to travel light years, then he should not be primitive anymore in the sense of just shooting around.
Okay, okay. Now, going back to some of your original book, Chariots of the Gods, I mean, in your opinion, how did they create our culture, or did they help create our culture?
Yes. Again, it's very complicated. We have not only been visited once in the past, we have been visited at least 3 times in the past. And the first visit, we have no idea when it was. They came to our planet, they realized that there are millions of forms of life. And one of the life forms was the most advanced, so to say, some of the apes, some of our ancestors. Now they took one exemplary, they simply took one cell of them and they changed the cell of it by genetical meaning, something which is easy to do, every genetics does it today. Now this cell is put back into a sort of liquid of nutrition. The cell grows, and then it was implanted into the womb of a female of the same species. Now, this female gave birth to a child. Of course, this child has the whole evolution. The child has the skeleton, has the bone, has the fingers, the arms, etc. But because of the artificial mutation, the child has something in plus what the rest of the tribe, of the ape tribe, for example, will not have. For example, the possibility to talk, the possibility to make culture, the possibility of songs, tools, etc. Now, soon as you want to have a new branch out of the tree, you need at least two. You need female and male. And now you land in the legend of Adam and Eve. And God created Adam and Eve according his own image. Now this new population grow. After some thousands of years, the so-called gods, the extraterrestrials, returned again. And they realized what happened. And they made some changes. For example, with the great floods, they created even new beings. According to all traditions, and I am very familiar with them, even Noah, you know, the one who survived the great flood, was the product of an artificial mutation. So it happened, a changing, two or three times in our past, which, by the way, does not contradict evolution. We are the child of evolution, but there was something artificial, something in plus during our growing.
Yeah, so you believe in evolution, but, you know, ETs, in your opinion, help speed up evolution, our evolution.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. But what about those Darwin theorists that say, you know, Darwin's right, close case?
Yes, Darwin is absolutely right. Except some artificial mutations which happened during the past of our growing.
Okay.
By the way, I have to excuse a little thing, my language. You see, I'm Swiss. I live in Switzerland. My first language is, of course, Swiss and German, and then French and Italian. And English is number five. So from time to time, I have problems to understand your questions or to express myself. Please understand. Thank you.
You're coming through very clear. Don't worry. So why did they leave? Or would you say they've never left? I mean, we have all these UFO sightings. Are they still with us now? Are these UFO sightings different races? Who's visiting us right now? Who are they?
You see, if ethnologists, they go to a tribe somewhere in South Africa or America, they study the tribe. Maybe they help in a little few things. They tell them something, teach them a little. But then they leave again, the ethnologists. And after some years, maybe 10 or 20 years, they will return to see what happened. And in past, the same thing happened. These extraterrestrials created the first intelligent human. They disappeared again because they wanted to continue. They didn't want to leave on our planet. And now, in a few thousand years later, they will return again to see what happens. Just comparable to ethnologists. Now, as I said before, we don't know how this will happen. But it will happen. And I think it's much better to be prepared for such a possibility than to be completely shocked when it will happen. That's, by the way, why I'm doing a part of my job. I have many, many pictures in public, and I simply show the listeners and the audience some evidence, and I show them good evidence which exists. But at the end of every speech, I say, ladies and gentlemen, please do not believe this. I will not create a new religion or a new sect. It would be terrible for me. I would turn myself in my tomb if some idiots make out a new sect or a new religion out of what I think. But what I ask you, the audience, is please think about it. Try to follow me a little. Try to control a little. And many of the audience, also from the scientific community, they came finally to the similar explanation as I gave. We were visited by beings from outer space. There was an influence in the past, and they will return.
I mean, we say that disclosure's not happened. We say the government's covering secrets up. But, you know, with a great researcher like yourself, disclosure has happened.
I know. Today, we still have this problem with the UFOs. And, of course, the real researchers know that many of UFOs are misinterpretations, are maybe false information, or even falsificates. But still, we have some very, very good cases in the UFO field. And now, I am not a UFO researcher. My specialty is the visits from extraterrestrials in antiquity, while UFOs is a present problem. So I think we are observed again, but I could not tell you who is it, from which solar system are they coming. Is that just the preparation for the next visit? I cannot answer these questions. I simply don't know. But I believe we are visited. Somebody is watching us.
That's right. So in your opinion, you believe that there's intelligent beings in the cosmos, but would you say then that arrogance still stands in the way of mankind, that we're the only existence in sort of intelligence life out there?
No. There are millions and millions of intelligent forms of life out there. We are just one living part of it. We should learn to become more modest again. We always think that we are the crown of creation or we are the top of evolution. In my opinion, this is all rubbish. We are neither the crown of creation nor the top of evolution. We are just one of billions of intelligent forms of life out there. And sooner or later, we will have contact again with them.
So, Eric, why do you think that the ancient astronaut theory is very popular right now compared to 1968, when it was a very taboo subject to talk about?
Well, the situation has changed. The scientific knowledge has changed. We know much more in the meantime as before. We have found and translated more old texts in the meantime as we had it in 1968. The whole situation is different today at looking at those things than it was some 40 and 50 years ago. And by the way, there's not only Eric von Däniken who comes out with this theory. I know of many of my colleagues in different countries, in England, in the United States, who have published books with similar ideas and theories. Some of them are absolutely brilliant. So I'm not the lonely fighter anymore. Many others help to support this hypothesis.
No, and that's right. And we'll come to some of them in a minute, including Zachariah Sitchin. But still sticking on this theme, you've mentioned there, Eric, that you're religious. So this doesn't go against your religious belief in the theory of alien beings, does it?
No. I was educated as a Catholic. And now just, let's say, for 1 minute in my favor, think that Eric von Däniken would be right. So, okay, we were visited by extraterrestrials. So the next question has to be, where did they come from? What is their past, their evolution? Now you can go on and say they also were visited by another solar system. So, and where have they started, et cetera, et cetera. You can play back this game for billions and billions of years, and finally you arrive to a starting point. And there is the moment when you ask God, what is the creation of the universe, the spirit of the universe? So others call it God. I call it the grand spirit of the universe. Of course, I have no definition for God. No astrophysicist has it. But we know that in the beginning there was something which we cannot explain. So I have never lost my God. I am one of these few people who still pray.
Yeah, okay. So let's move on here into some of your research. Now, you've researched so many hundreds and hundreds of different sites across the world. I want to just tune into two of them, which is Stonehenge. Now, where has your research took you with Stonehenge?
Well, first of all, Stonehenge is not only a gigantic circle of stones. Stonehenge is part of a geometrical pattern. It's part of a gigantic plan. It makes a big triangle, and then it turns to a long line, which in Britain they call Lee lines. Sometimes these Lee lines have hundreds of kilometers, and under the lines are always prehistorical holy places, like stone circles or graves of giants and something like this. So Stonehenge is a part of a planning system, but this geometrical pattern does not fit into the thinking of Stone Age people. They had no geometrical knowledge in this sense. For example, in France, Brittany, there we have thousands of stones standing in exact lines. Definitely, there we have it to do with Pythagorean triangles. But Pythagoras, the Greek mathematician, he lived around 450 BC, while these Stone Age things in French Brittany and in England, Stonehenge, are thousands of years older than Pythagoras, older than 450 BC. So somebody was planning. Somebody was telling our primitive Stone Age people, okay, guys, now you erect gigantic circles or stones. And why has this planner done this? Because of the future. The generations in the future, in the far future, should be upset, should realize something is wrong in our past. We see it here. There are stones in exact geometrical forms. Something is wrong. Now, the people of the future start to ask themselves, have we maybe been visited by extraterrestrials? Would this be an answer? Now you have a controversy about extraterrestrials. Sooner or later, humans accept it because we have the old traditions, we have the holy tales, we have the holy books, etc., and there we read the stories of extraterrestrials. So all this together, Stonehenge, French Brittany, places in old Greece, etc., including the old writings, bring mankind of the future to the question, what's wrong? Now you ask the question, have you been visited by beings from outer space? Soon as you say yes, then you come to the next question. Should these visitors not have left some kind of proof? I mean, some evidence, some message for us. They have not just disappeared like ghosts, leaving nothing behind it. And that's exactly the situation we have now. We have the indications from the past. Now we have the question. And now we should very sober and calm with scientific thinking go to solve the problem. Where is the proof? Where is the message of extraterrestrials? And sooner or later we will find it.
But these building blocks today still can't be done with, you know, chicken bone and string, can they?
I don't think so. Well, there are many theories in archaeology how it was done. But the question is not even for me, were they able to do it or not? Finally, they have done it. Stonehenge is a fact. It's here. But the question is, why have they done it? For what purpose? What was behind it and behind the planning? And not, were they able or not to do it? I still think, for example, a gigantic building like the Great Pyramid in Egypt was made by humans, not by extraterrestrials. But the extraterrestrials, they told them how to do it. They teach them in geometry, and they give them some help in their tools.
So you don't believe in the theory that maybe giants built these huge ancient structures?
I am nearly sure that giants existed in the past, because we have too many traditions talking about giants, including in the Bible, by the way. But giants were rather the stupid ones in antiquity. They were not the high intelligence, the high IQ in the past. From giants, we have maybe buildings on the island of Malta, so primitive sort of temples, gigantic stone blocks, but not intellectual things like Stonehenge.
But do you think it's scientific enough for mainstream archaeology and scholars to say that all these, you know, structures, temples, were references to what, you know, to honor the ancient gods, close case, let's move on? Is that very scientific?
No, not all of it. Of course, many of the temples and structures have nothing to do with extraterrestrials. They were simply created for natural religions, for the moon, for the sun, for the lightning, etc., what our forefathers was afraid of and could not understand. But the example is whenever talking comes into the place, for example, information was given, some god was talking to the humans, some gods, for example, in old times explained to the Central American tribe of Maya, to their priest, how the earth turns around the sun in 365 days, etc. Or in the old book of Enoch. Enoch was one of the prophets before the great flood. And Enoch is the only one who gives the names of the extraterrestrials. We know who was doing what. So in that case, the teacher from heaven told Enoch exactly scientific things. How to make metal, how to mix metal, how about the moon, that the moon has no lights by itself, that the light of the moon comes from the sun, etc., etc. In all these cases, you have information. Information given by someone to our primitive Stone Age people. And in that case, natural religion helps nothing.
Now, going on these ancient structures and temples, what about the carvings in the ground, like the Nazca lines in Peru? I mean, were these aerial direction indicators rather than sort of symbols of religion? And also, what sort of research have you done into Nazca?
Of course, Nazca is my special field. I have a whole book about Nazca, but I don't have too much time anymore. Now listen, Nazca is in South America, is in Peru, is about 500 kilometers south of Lima. In the meantime, when you go from Lima to Nazca, it's a highway, so it's fantastic. Some 20 years ago, it was just a road, not even a road, a pista going through the desert. Soon as you are in the ground of Nazca, you see nothing. An usual desert with sand and small brown stones. But then you go into a small aircraft and you fly over Nazca. And of a sudden, you see beneath you gigantic figures. Figures like fishes, monkeys, spiders, and so on. And then but all of such overdimensional size that you can see them only from the air. On the ground, you see nothing. Then you fly higher. And the next thing you realize are gigantic lines. Lines, they look from the air like an airstrip. By the way, I never said it was an airstrip, but it looks like an airstrip. The lines start abruptly, end abruptly. The longest is 3.8 kilometers long. So when you fly over Nazca, you have a mixture of different things. The one thing are figures. The other things are the lines who look like airstrips. And the number third thing are small lines, about 1 meter large. But they are 23 kilometers long, straight away, crossing over hills and mountains. And nobody understands what this is. Now, I think it was all a cult. You see, an extraterrestrial spaceship who is hundreds of years on the way, they measure, for example, our planet, because they see a solar system, they see that it's planet number 3, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, so it makes sense to come close of it, simply to observe are their life forms and how advanced are they. Now these extraterrestrials, they will probably go into an orbit with their mother spaceship around the Earth. And after a journey of hundreds and hundreds of years, they need definitely energy. I don't know what kind of energy, be it raw material, be it uranium, whatever. They need energy because after some hundreds of years, they are down with their energy. They must fuel. Now, some automatic station will realize down on the Earth, in what we call today Peru, there is a desert. And this desert has the raw material which they urgently need. Now, they send down simply a robot. And the robot comes down into the desert of Nazca, and as deeper he comes, before he touches the ground, sand, small stones are blown away, and a simple line appears in the desert because of the landing of the robot. Now this robot starts to make some measurements. Do we find the raw material? And how, in what quality is the raw material, etc.? And the robot disappears again. But one or two natives have observed what was happening, and they cannot understand what was happening. In their eyes, something has descended from heaven and was on the ground and left a small line behind. So this something must be the gods, some sort of gods. Now this man or these people who observed it, they run to their tribe and they say, we saw it with our own eyes. It descended here. It left a line behind. And now the priests start to think, well, these gods showed us lines, so we must start to make lines. And now the natives start to make lines, all in honors of the gods. And of course, they always accept the return of the gods. And one day, some priest may have a brilliant idea. A priest always have brilliant ideas. And he say, we must show these gods up there in the sky that we have offerings from them. And now they create in the ground some animals of fishes and monkeys and whales and whatever. So it was all a cult. Cult made by the natives, but cult for the gods. Because all these lines, all these figures, you can only see from the air. When you are on the ground, you see absolutely nothing. But the starting point for this cult was, in fact, first the landing of some extraterrestrial robot to test what kind of raw material they would find here.
Incredible, incredible. Now, I know we're coming up to the hour here, so we haven't got too long left, but just a couple more things I want to talk about with you is...
Yes, but listen, I have only about 5 minutes. I have to run away.
Oh, gosh. Right. Well, just very quickly, one of your great friends, dear friends, was Zachariah Stichen, a researcher into the ancient astronaut theory, much like yourself. Now, he sadly passed away this year. What's your take on his research? What's your take on the Sumerian and the Anunnaki gods that he researched into? How's that fit into your work?
Well, we have been friends all the time. and we adore each one other, although we have in some point different ideas. I never accepted the idea of Zachariah Sachem of the 12th planet, because we have no other planet in our solar system. If we would have one, we would have measured it long time ago. But I absolutely agree with Zachariah Sachin with his translation from the old Sumerian cuneiform text into our language. So this was absolutely his fantastic work he did. And I'm afraid you said that he passed away. We just 3 or 4 weeks before he passed away, we were together on a radio show by phone in the United States.
And has Roswell ever come up in your research as well?
Of course, but Roswell is modern. You know, this story in Roswell happened in 1974, and about 20 or 25 years time ago, I always thought Roswell is a fake. That's all garbage. But then I was in Roswell in person. I had a speech there, and I had the opportunity to talk to some people who were in the meantime old people, but in 1947, when Roswell happened, they were young. And they explained me what happened at that time. And in the meantime, I completely have changed my mind. I believe we had an extraterrestrial crash in Roswell, but the society, the CIA or whatever, was not fair enough or not able to give this to the public.
Okay. And just finally, what important points, Eric, do you want readers to take from your books?
First of all, just become modest again. We have to learn. We are neither the crown of creation nor the top of evolution. We are just one teeny part of billions of intelligent forms of life out there. Sooner or later, we will have contact again with them. And sooner or later, and I would suggest within the next 50 years, some extraterrestrials will land on Earth. So it makes sense. It is fair to be prepared for such an event. It is better than to be shocked. But all this has nothing to do with the new religion and the new sect. Do not believe it. Just try to control whatever is possible you can control.
How can people find out your work? Do you have a website?
Efon, you know my name.
Yep.
Efon Daniken, and then it's theape@gmail.com. Bye-bye, and thank you for the interview.
To find out more information on Eric von Daniken, go to daniken.com or visit my site, themoreshow.co.uk, and look up Daniken under past guests. Also there, you can look up Ganjo under past guests as well, and there'll be a link to the song to download for the Christmas charity single. Well, from myself and all my guests, until next time, be safe.